94.3 The Bridge, your hometown voice. And now your host, the Rogue Announcer, Jeff Smith.
And I am the Rogue Announcer, Jeff Smith, and this is Rogue Talk for October 12th, 2018. And if for those of you that follow Rogue Talk on Facebook and maybe see some of my posts on Instagram, you know that I've been very excited about today's show, and I'm really looking forward to this interview. I've spent about an hour and a half talking to my guest, But the interview won't be quite that long, but I just really was excited about her book. And that guest is the author of the book, The Heart of the Runaway, Liberty Elias Miller. And we will get to that interview as quickly as we can, because I'm really looking forward to that. But before we do that, let's... don't have any super exciting news to relate to you about local stuff, and I don't feel the need to rant on anything going on in the national news, although I will give one little side note. Despite what your politics are, the things that were said on CNN about Kanye West, those are pretty disgusting, and if you don't know what I'm talking about, I'm not going to get into it. Go ahead and Google some of the things that were said. If anyone else had said something like that other than, you know, some African-American hosts along with the African-American guests on a news show, they would be taken off the air immediately. It would not pass. But I guess for CNN, anything goes. And so, again, I'm not going to get into that too much, except to say that I'm not a fan of Kanye West. I'm not even a fan of a lot of what he had to say at the White House this week. But what they've said about him and attacking his mental illness and attacking, you know, him for his color and basically finding several disgusting ways to call him an Uncle Tom. I think it's disgusting. I think that it's not something that should be going on in a civil society. But again, you know, I guess it's CNN. I guess we've just kind of come to expect that. And, you know, I don't say that hyperbolically. CNN has just discredited themselves over and over in the last few years. And this is a whole new low. This is the kind of stuff I expect from MSNBC. But at least MSNBC has the guts to admit that they're mostly a liberal station, and they don't hide that. CNN claims to be objective, but they're really not. And this is a new low. And again, I'm not going to get into the specifics, but you can Google, go to YouTube and look up the things that were said from CNN. And I hope you'll agree with me that this is a new low in our political discussion. And I think it's gross. So that's all I've got to say about national news. And again, nothing too exciting to report in local news. So let's take a look at Chieftain Sports. Of course, all the goings on at the high school here in Rogue River, an important part of the show, and I intend to keep it that way. Of course, the football team was at home last Friday, and they took it on the chin from a very, very good Glide team. Glide had beaten Illinois Valley last week 60-0, and it was a similar outcome for the Chieftains last Friday. They lost 64-8. Only a last-minute touchdown on a kick return got that score to be 8, but Chieftains will try and bounce back tonight. The volleyball team unfortunately lost their game this week on Tuesday. They went against Butte Falls and lost 3-0. Boys soccer, with a pair of games this past week, they lost last week, or last Friday actually, just before the football game. They lost 7-1 to Cascade Christian, and then they won this past week. I guess this would have been Wednesday night, 2-0 versus Canyonville Academy. And that puts the boys soccer team with an 8-3 overall record, 7-3 in the league. And girls soccer, it had a pair of wins this past week. Last Saturday, they won at IV 8-1, and an identical 8-1 score Wednesday versus Eagle Point. So a couple of wins for the girls soccer. And finally, well, I was going to bring you the cross-country results. I'll save that for the end of the show when I give you the upcoming schedule, because I don't know how many of you spend any time on the internet on your phone, but just as I was bringing up the best website for cross-country information, which is athletic.net, I got hit with one of those, you've won a $1 million Amazon gift card, all you have to do is sell your soul by clicking right here, and I'm not going to click there. So we'll get those information in just a bit, just after our interview with Liberty Elias Miller. So that's all I've got for you for this segment. Going to cut it a little short so we can save as much time for the interview as possible. So we'll take a quick break here and be back with more Rogue Talk. Don't go away.
You're listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge.
With SRN News, I'm Keith Peters in Washington. Oil and gas workers are returning to drilling rigs and production platforms in the Gulf of Mexico, but production remains down by about one-third as operations are restarted. The Bureau of Safety and Environmental Enforcement said in a report Friday that 32.4% of oil production and a little more than 13% of natural gas production in the Gulf has remained shut down because of Hurricane Michael. Stocks clawed back some of the ground they lost in a two-day rout, but still suffered their biggest weekly loss in 6 months. Even with Friday's moderate gains, major U.S. indexes lost about 4% for the week. A recent spike in interest rates has spooked investors who fear higher borrowing costs could slow down the economy. Longtime market favorites like Amazon and Apple came roaring back. Several major banks, including PNC Financial, fell, and small company stocks lagged far behind. More details at srnnews.com.
Bringing you Rogue River's weather forecast at the top of every hour, this is meteorologist Ann Holliday with 94.3 The Bridge.
Welcome back to Rogue Talk. Now joining me by phone, an author, a Rogue River native, I think, or at least someone who spent some time living in Rogue River, Liberty Elias Miller. Liberty, welcome to Rogue Talk.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. So, first of all, were you born in Rogue River, or I know you grew up in Rogue River?
Yeah, born and raised.
Okay.
Born in Grants Pass, grew up in Weimar.
Ah, exactly. And that's why we're here, because you are the daughter of Cheryl Martin Sund, and she's the one that contacted me and said that I should be interviewing you, and and after kind of digging into your story, I went, "Yeah, I absolutely should be. This is exactly who we want to talk to on Rogue Talk." So,
yeah, she's my biggest fan.
Yeah, I gathered that for sure. And and after reading this book, or at least most of it, I've still got a little left to go, but I can see a lot of reasons why she would be your biggest fan. You have quite the adventurous spirit, and I think she recognizes that for sure.
Oh, yeah.
So before we dive into the book, and there's plenty to dive into, that's for sure. This book takes you on a roller coaster ride, I will say, and I'm enjoying the ride so far. But before we get into that, let's talk about you, your life in Rogue River. We mentioned your mom is Cheryl Martin Sund, and your stepdad is Bruce Sund, and of course, a lot of people know Bruce, whether they know him because of he's on the school board, or because of the teams that he's coached, or any number of other reasons. And of course, we know your mom because, I mean, if for no other reason, you get people asking, like on Facebook all the time, why is it called Martin's Corner?
Yeah.
So we quickly explained to them that The Martin Ranch is there, and there's a lot of history on that ranch. And of course, you grew up over there. So tell us, you know, and some of this is in the book, but let's kind of get into that a little bit. Tell us what it was like living on the Martin Ranch, so to speak.
It was the best way to be raised. Of course, as a kid, I don't think I fully appreciated it, but now as an adult, I do. But, you know, my best friends were my cousin and my brother and the neighbor kid, and we had free reign of that ranch. You know, we would leave in the morning and run around until well past dark. And my parents never worried. I mean, we were always out doing something fun, floating down Evans Creek or hiking up to the gold mine that's behind the ranch on the mountain behind the ranch, or just roaming around being kids. It was such a carefree childhood.
Yeah, and you obviously grew up in a time that a little later than I did, but a similar time where, you know, you had to be home by sundown, and that was pretty much it. You know, there was the helicopter parenting hadn't really taken hold yet. And, and a perfect place, and of course, a perfect place to do that is living in Weimar. Now, I grew up in a different area, but Weimar has got to be one of the perfect places to grow up in the time where, you know, you just knew you had to be home for dinner. You didn't, you could be gone all day. You didn't have to check in. You just had to be home for dinner.
Right, and most often we would leave after dinner to roam around the ranch in the dark.
Exactly. So you went to Rogue River Schools. Tell us how that experience was.
Yeah, I went to Evans Valley Elementary School, which, you know, a lot of people will know it's now the community center out in Weimar. Went to elementary school there and then went to Rogue River Middle School, which I believe is now the elementary school. And then I graduated from Rogue River High School in 1999.
Okay. So you graduated just before about 2 years before I moved here. So and then you took off on an adventure, which we're going to get into, which is the heart of what your book is about. But our paths never crossed before, but I got to say, after talking to you before this interview, we started this interview, I'm looking forward to that when our paths will cross. This is a great book, and we're going to get into that. But I wanted to make one more connection. Of course, here on Rogue Talk, I frequently have had the FFA kids in on the show, and in fact, I always run into Bruce and Cheryl at the awards banquet, or I haven't made it to the beef feed, but I plan to do that at some point. But I also get to hang out with Cole and Evan, a couple of your nephews. And in fact, Evan was my contact when we would set up interviews. And I would imagine you probably have a pretty good relationship with them, because those are two great kids, too.
They are amazing kids. And yeah, I was pretty young when they came around. And so I was kind of growing up with them as well. You know, I was 15 when Cole was born and 17, I believe, when Evan was born. So yeah, I was still fairly young, and to have these little babies around, you know, in the same house as me, I helped raise them. So I'm still pretty close with both of them. And actually, Cole was just up here in Alaska, where I live now. He was just up here last month visiting me.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah.
Now, how long have you been in Alaska?
Off and on since 2003, but I'm in the town of Seward, Alaska, which is just south of Anchorage, and this is my second summer in Seward, and I'm staying this winter as well. This will be my first winter in Alaska.
Oh, that should be fun.
Yeah.
Probably a little colder than even the Rogue River winters.
Yeah. I'm kind of nervous about it, but also really excited.
Well, after reading some of the things that you've been through, and I doubt a little bit of cold and snow is going to be enough to take down Liberty.
Yeah, we'll see. Talk to me again in January.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, if you show up in Rogue River in the middle of winter, we'll know that the winter had gotten to you and
yep.
had to come and get the warmth of mom and dad. Well, that's great. So let's get into the book. The name of the book is The Heart of the Runaway, and it was just released this past March. And basically, this is the book of your life. I mean, to this point, more or less. Am I wrong about that?
No, that's correct. Yeah.
So I'm gonna start with a couple of things that stood out to me. You know, at least near the beginning of the book. The book starts with you thinking that you were dying. You were yeah. You were being attacked by jellyfish, and you
yeah.
and you felt like you might be dying, and you were okay with that. That struck me a little bit. I mean, at least that's how I read it, and maybe you can mm-hmm. you can kind of expound on that a little bit. But what I got from the first paragraph of the book is how you creatively paint the picture of love and of love lost and of new love and chasing your dreams and facing your nightmares and all these separate experiences, yet they're all connected, and you really creatively made all those connections. So what led you to write this book? Because I mean, when you read the stories, there's no doubt why. I mean, there's no doubt that there was a book there just waiting to be written. But what led you to writing this book?
Well, to get into that story, you know, we have to go back 20 years. I actually started writing this book when I was 16 years old. And I never thought that it would actually become a published book. I kind of, in the back of my mind, hoped that it someday would, but I never expected it to. When I was 16, my brother was murdered in Weimar, and writing was really the only way I had of handling that, the only outlet I had. And my aunt had given me some books that other victims of murder had written. You know, they were these books that people who had experienced the murder of a loved one had written. And they were just stories about, this is what we went through, this is how we handled it. And those books really helped me. You know, I was 16. My brother had just been murdered. My parents were, you know, tangled up in this legal web and dealing with all of that. And so I had my books and my writing. And I read these books that my aunt had given me, and I realized that I wanted to share my story and the story of my brother's death in the hopes of someday helping some other 16-year-old girl that is going through the same thing or something similarly traumatic. And I wanted to write the book to help other people. And so I just started writing, and that's how I coped with my brother's death. And, you know, as I grew up and life started happening, I started having all these amazing experiences going overseas and things like that. And the book just kind of evolved naturally into what it is today.
Okay, well, and since that's the source of why you wrote the book and mm-hmm. what led you to write the book, you took us there. So let's kind of continue on that a little bit. And I guess maybe we can get the most negative of part of your story out of the way first. Now, okay. your brother, before he was murdered, was probably what most people would describe as troubled, was into drugs, and was probably not always in the best frame of mind. In fact, in the book, you described some instances with him fighting with your stepdad and how scared you were and how angry he would get. And he was a rather large individual, if I read that right.
Yeah, he was very tall. He was about 6'5", very tall and lanky.
And so he was in a bad way, and he was involved in drugs. And some of that relates to what led to his murder.
Right.
But it also, and I don't want to make this about his murder per se. It's there's nothing to be gained from digging into that part of the past. But what where it connects to your story is you started down a similar path, and to me, at least intellectually, I would say, why would you do that? Why would you? You saw what happened. You were you know, terribly hurt by the loss of your brother, and you started going down a similar path of self-destruction. Describe that part of your life, and you mention it in the book, but kind of relate again how what was that moment where you finally realized, hey, this is not working. I've got to turn this around.
Yeah, it was. It was. There's no other way to describe it except to say it was such a crazy and out of control time in my life. And I had not been involved with drugs before my brother's murder. I was always the good kid. But, you know, I was 16 years old and my brother had just been murdered. I had no idea what to do. And I started hanging out with his friends. His friends were using drugs. They were offering me drugs. I was hurt and lost and scared and confused. And so I did start to go down that same path as him. And, you know, at the same time, it's, you know, back then it's what destroyed me back then. But also at the same time, I think it's what saved me, is because I lived that little bit of life that my brother had. I experienced that, and I realized that wasn't for me. And, you know, eventually got help, got clean, and came out the other side a much stronger person. You know, I mean, there's really no way to explain what it's like to be that age or to be any age and to have your brother murdered by people that you know. You know, murder is something that happens on TV and in the movies and in the news. It's not something that happens to you or to your family. You know, and in a small town like Rogue River, it was like the coolest thing to ever happen in that town.
Yeah, cool in a dark sort of way. Yeah, I can
exactly.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah. I mean, everyone knew who I was, not because I was part of the Martin family, but because I was Burns' sister. Everyone was watching me, you know, seeing. It was almost like they were waiting for me to snap. Like they wanted to see me break. And so I did.
Yeah,
I did.
I can't imagine what that pressure would be like. But you mentioned in the book and I think it was, well, there's a couple of things related to this incident and this part of your life that stood out to me. One was there was a moment when one of the friends of his that you are now hanging out with, he told you something that possibly was a lie, but it really was kind of a you know, way for you to kind of check yourself and go, you know, wait a minute, you know, the way I need to serve my brother is to not continue down this road. That had to be a tough moment of clarity for someone, you know, all of 16 years old.
Yeah. That moment. You know, to this day, I don't know if what he told me was true or not, but, you know, what you're referring to is my brother's friend, Mike. He told me that Byrne had told him before his death that he would give his life if it kept me off drugs. And Mike told me this after I had a really scary incident at a party with drugs. And, you know, that moment, sitting on that log up in the forest, we were way up by Bybee Springs, like up towards Elderberry Flats out in Weimar.
Mm-hmm.
And that moment, it was kind of like walking into a brick wall. You know, it made me open my eyes. And I realized that this is the moment when I pick my path.
Yeah.
That I either continued down this road of drugs and you know, doing bad things, or I turn and go the other way and get my life together and use this horrible experience as inspiration for not only myself, but for other people.
Yeah. Now, the other moment that, and then we're going to kind of move away from this because I'd like to get into the kind of the later chapters of your life.
Sure.
But there was also a one of the kids involved in the situation that led to your brother's murder. And your family forgave him, and you struggled with that for a while, but eventually you came around. How hard was that for you? Again, I mean, you're a young girl coping with the murder of your brother and the scrutiny of the entire community, it feels like, is staring at you. What did it take to for you to finally forgive? I believe his name was Chris. Is that right?
Yeah.
The family had forgiven him and had kind of accepted him as part of the family, but you weren't ready to do that. What did it take to get you to that point?
Well, I think that I wasn't ready to do that because I was hanging on to that pride. You know, at that point, it was a matter of pride. I was the tough girl that was getting in trouble and hanging out with the cool kids who were the bad kids. And so, you know, it was a matter of pride where I'm not going to do what my parents tell me. Now, I'm not going to forgive this guy just because my parents have. It was that kind of thing. And it was stupid, really.
Well,
you know,
rebellious for sure.
Yeah. You know, that young arrogance and you think you know everything. But I reached a point with my anger at the situation, you know, the situation being my brother's death. I reached a point where I was just tired. I was tired of being angry. And I, for whatever reason, decided to open my mind and my heart and my life to Chris and hear his side of the story. And so we met up and he told me his side of the story and, you know, and it led to forgiveness. And he's very important to me now.
Yeah, and that, I mean, it takes that kind of, I think it takes that kind of an event or that kind of a situation that you have to deal with that really is where growth is anchored. You know, it's those little key things that you get through. So let's get away from that now. We've covered the grim, probably the most grim part of your story. And there's still some, you know, there's still some life challenges that you go through. But let's jump ahead to later on. And you make the decision. You're married, and you make the decision that you're going to go off and chase this dream, and you're pretty sure it means the end of your marriage, but it's not 100% at that point. But what, tell us, describe that dream to us again. I don't want to make it as much about, you know, about your marriage ending, although that's an important part of the story. But we're not going to be able to cover every single detail that I would love. I could do this interview for about 2 hours. That's how much I've enjoyed this book. But let's get to your dream and kind of some of the leaps of faith you've taken to pursue that dream. So you have an opportunity to do something, and it basically means leaving your husband, although you're not sure yet that you're leaving him for good. But what was that opportunity, and let's kind of just jump off from there into some of your adventures.
Sure. You know, even though I was raised inland, you know, I wasn't raised by the ocean. You know, it's a 2-hour drive. You know, those people around Rogue River that knew my grandfather, they'll remember his passionate love for nature. And so I grew up with that, you know, having that instilled within me to revere nature. And I was raised, you know, basically Native American. My family is Nez Perce, and my grandpa really embraced that. And so I was raised to love nature, and I always did, but for me, it was more the ocean, even though I was not raised near the ocean. But, you know, it always seemed to call to me, you know, the deep blue. And, you know, being raised to love animals, I always wanted to protect animals and do conservation and, you know, things like that. And but, you know, life gets in the way. I graduated high school. I went to college, got married. But I still always had that passion in me to travel and protect wildlife. But back then, it wasn't really a thing. I mean, Greenpeace did exist, but how do you join Greenpeace? You know, I was raised in a family that does things the correct way, which is graduate high school, go to college, get married, have kids, and work at the same job. And that's not what I wanted, but I didn't know how to have what I wanted. And my husband and I were living in Bellingham, Washington, which is just north of Seattle. And I was doing photography as a career, but I wanted so much more. And randomly, I was offered a foreign correspondent position in Japan with the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, protesting and photographing the dolphin slaughter that happens in Japan. And initially I turned it down, but I spent the week after I had turned it down realizing that I had just turned down my dream to travel and to use my photography and my writing for something good and to actively do marine conservation and animal rights. But I didn't think I could do it because I was married. I had this career. How do you just up and leave? But I ended up accepting the position. And my husband and I had been going through marriage counseling for a year. And we had decided to divorce. But then the Japan opportunity was presented to me. And it was a four-month contract. And so we decided to put the divorce on hold and see how we felt after 4 months apart. And, you know, 4 months went by and I came home from Japan and we went ahead with the divorce. But that's what kickstarted all these adventures that I've been on since then.
Well, and that's a big part of what your book is about, is all the various adventures, you know, the different jobs that you've taken. And of course, there's a little bit of relationship things in there, friends that you had, a friend that you knew from Rogue River, I believe, that was it in Australia that you guys were together for a while? Was it Australia? Am I getting that right? Or what?
Yeah, there's no one from Rogue River that was in Australia.
No, I'm trying to think now what the, now I see I'm mixing stories or already mixing up in my head. And I, so we'll skip that part then because I'm not remembering that right. But, well, and now one quick note is I haven't seen all of the pictures in the book yet, but there was one picture in there I have to ask you about. How the heck did it end up that you were hanging out with Michelle Rodriguez? Because I'm a huge fan.
That's because of Sea Shepherd, the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. After I left Japan, which was a land-based campaign with Sea Shepherd, I joined their flagship, the Steve Irwin, which was featured on Whale Wars, the TV show.
Okay.
And so we were in Cannes, France for the Cannes Film Festival, and Michelle was there, and she used to crew on the Steve Irwin. So she threw this huge party for us, you know, at this million-dollar mansion in Cannes, France. It was pretty exciting.
I'll bet.
So.
No, I've been a fan of hers, I think, since Lost. And, well, I mean, let's face it, I'm a red-blooded American male, and she's very attractive, so.
Well, I do have to say, I was never a fan of her acting before I met her, and I was almost kind of disappointed that out of all the celebrities that have supported Sea Shepherd in some way, that Michelle Rodriguez was the one I was meeting, because I was not a fan of hers. But she is the sweetest person. She is so humble and kind, and she's incredible.
Well, that's good to hear, because, you know, we hear all the bad stories about celebrities, but not very often do we actually get to hear how good of people they are. We know right. how good they tell us they are, but we don't always know the real story.
Right.
So I had to ask about that, because that was kind of a cool couple of pictures that in the book. But so part of your adventure after you hadn't divorced your husband, but you were falling in love with another man, and it turns out that he wasn't in love with you. His name was James, I believe.
Yeah.
Tell us what that experience was like. What was the work you were doing? I was just really kind of taken in by the whole story.
Yeah. So James crewed on the Sea Verwin with me, and he's actually still on the Sea Shepherd boat. I'm not sure which one he's currently on, but he's still with Sea Shepherd. And anyone who has ever seen Whale Wars will know who he is. He's one of the main people. So he was the bosun of the Steve Irwin, which basically means he's the manager of the deck team. My main role was the photographer, but when there was nothing exciting to photograph, I was a deckhand. So he was pretty much my boss. Just one of those things. You're on a boat. You're in the middle of the Mediterranean. And, it was all so magical. And I was still legally married, but we had been separated for almost a year. And James knew that I was still legally married, so that was no secret. But, it's one of those things that it was all so magical. How do you not fall in love?
Yeah.
It was all so new for me and for James. He had been on the ship for years at that point. So, it was all, it wasn't magical to him.
I see. But, it's an interesting story. And for those of you listening, if it feels like we're jumping around, we are. And part of the reason we are is because I joked to Liberty before the interview that it was hard for me to do like a quick skim type reading of the book, because it's not chronological. It jumps around. It takes you back into the past, and then it takes you back, where we were. And that's one of the endearing things about this book, is that it's not chronological. It's not a history book. It's your stories, and it's told in the way, that they happen to you, and you make all these connections to your past and to that. So if it feels like we're jumping around, there's a reason for that. And it's not just because I'm a bad interviewer, although that's part of it. But so you mentioned a couple of times the Sea Shepherd program, and this may be in the book and I may not have gotten to this part of it, but early in the book, you mentioned that you no longer felt aligned with this. I don't remember how you worded it. So what happened with the Sea Shepherd program that made you need to separate from them?
Well, I mean, if anyone has ever seen the TV show, it's reality TV.
Okay.
So basically, it's a lot of what you're seeing, it's glorified, it's not real, although on the other side of that's not to downplay what Sea Shepherd is doing. The TV show is very much real. It's very dangerous to be doing what those people are doing. But it's also, a huge conservation nonprofit. So there is so much drama, so much politics. And even though it started out in the 70s with the best of intentions, the love for cetaceans, which is dolphins and whales, and the desire to protect them, it started out that way, back in the 70s, but now it's more about power and money, and it all became so morally bankrupt. They were doing things for the ratings, for the fans, for the money.
Sure, sure. Yeah, and we see that with other types of reality TV. They're they're so scripted at this point that it's really not reality at times. I mean, it's not that the events aren't happening, but so much of it is made for TV. And so, yeah, I think I can understand the disillusionment that you would feel for that. So,
yeah.
Before we're going to run out of time. I wish I had more time to dig into this, and I'm going to really encourage people to go out and get the book. We'll talk a little more, but let me plug it one more time here. It's called The Heart of the Runaway, and the author is my guest today, Liberty Elias Miller, and it is available on Amazon or wherever books are sold. I got my copy from Amazon, and my hard copy will come later, but I have my ebook at the moment, and it's a wonderful book. It's a great combination of prose and ranting and just storytelling. It's a really fun book, but just because we're kind of short on time, there's one other connection that you make in this book, and that's to the band Floater. Now,
yeah.
What is your connection to the band, and how did you end up even working for them for a short bit?
Oh, Floater. I'm so disappointed I just missed their show in Grants Pass.
Oh, no.
I had a ticket, but flights from Alaska were very, very expensive, so... Floater. I mean, you know, they're an Oregon cult band. How does anybody not know and love Floater? Of course, I'm, you know, a hardcore fan, but, you know, Floater is one of those bands that my brother listened to them. We all listened to them. We all, you know, grew up listening to Floater, and they're incredible. They're absolutely incredible. And they kind of, to me, that band is the epitome of the power of music. Music is so powerful. And my brother and his friends introduced me to their music. And after Burn died, I really turned to Floater and, you know, used their music as a coping mechanism. And I really credit that band with being part of the reason that I decided to live. And I say in my book that I realize that to someone who doesn't love music, that sounds ridiculous, that I lived because of a band.
I can totally understand it. I don't know how the rest of the listeners are, but I get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, listening to Floater, their lyrics are so deep. They touch your soul. I mean, Rob, the front man, he's the one that wrote the foreword for my book, which means more to me than I could ever express. But I mean, he's a lyrical genius. He writes words that come from his soul, but it feels like he's pulling them right out of your soul.
Yeah.
He's an incredible person.
And you've got the lyrics, you know, kind of interstrewn throughout the book, and they fit your story, interestingly enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, each chapter starts off with Floater lyrics, and, you know, they're lyrics that mean a lot to me. You know, I chose specific lyrics for each chapter. So, you know, and throughout the years, just, you know, going to shows and becoming friends with the band, and I'm really close with them now, with Rob in particular. I work merchandise for them. I promote the shows. I do social media. You know, basically whatever they need, I do. I mean, not so much anymore because I'm all the way up here in Alaska, but still really good friends with them. And, you know, that's important to me. And to have Rob... to have his words inside my book, it's just, he's the perfect person to have written the foreword.
Yeah, and we're going to run out of time, but I actually have that in front of me, and if you'll let me, I'm going to read what he wrote. He says,
"Oh, absolutely."
He says that was when I realized that Libby walked through this world differently than most, not looking for what she could get, but what she could give, not seeking what she needed, but what needed her. I don't know what you're going to do with your life, I told her, but I know it's going to be amazing. those are some pretty powerful words, and I would love to leave it on that. And again, I could talk to you all night. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show, and I hope you'll come back. I'd love to, if we get another opportunity, maybe in person next time, we can dig into some more parts of this book. I would love to do that.
I would love to come back, and hopefully I will be in the Rogue Valley in January or February.
Well, then we'll make it happen. We'll get you in studio, and we'll talk more about this book, because I still have some more reading to do. I haven't finished, but I've enjoyed as much of it as I've gotten through. So, Liberty, thank you again for coming on the show. It's been a great, great pleasure.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
And we will take a break here and be right back.
You're listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge.
With SRN News, I'm Keith Peters in Washington. An official leading search and rescue efforts in one of the Florida communities hit hardest by Hurricane Michael says searchers have found bodies. Joseph Zalraban is Miami's fire chief. On Friday, he was in Mexico Beach on the Gulf Coast acting as a task force leader for a search and rescue unit. He told the Associated Press that searchers found individuals who are deceased among the devastation in Mexico Beach and surrounding Bay County. He says officials don't yet have a count of the dead. Facebook says it has gotten a handle on its security breach affecting nearly 30 million accounts, but it hasn't ruled out the possibility of smaller scale efforts to exploit the same vulnerability. Facebook is offering a website for people to check if their accounts have been accessed, and if so, exactly what information was stolen. On Wall Street, a good day as the Dow was up by 287 points. The Nasdaq rose 168. More details at srnnews.com.
Where the rooster crows. 94.3, The Bridge.
To Rogue Talk, and I want to give another thank you to my guest today. I hope you enjoyed that interview as much as I did. I just really enjoyed it. I can't wait to get her back on the show. In fact, I don't know if I can wait all the way until January or February, but if I want to have her live in studio, I guess I'm going to have to wait. But thanks again to Liberty Elias Miller. Her book, again, is The Heart of the Runaway. I will put a link to the book in the post for today's show on the website, so you can look for that. And I would definitely encourage you to go out and get the book, not only to support a local author, but it's just a good book. I really enjoyed it, so I'll encourage you to do that. I don't have a ton of time left. I'm going to try and fit everything else in that I needed to get to. I did forget one news item I meant to get to at the top of the hour, and that was some local news that a couple new radar speed cameras have gone in Medford. There was two already. They've added two more. The two new ones are at Biddle and McAndrews and Barnett and Stewart. There was already red light cameras there, but there is now speed radar cameras there. And that's in addition to two other locations where they had already put them in. One at North Central and East 4th, and the other at South Riverside and East 8th. So you don't want to speed in these big intersections in Medford. It's I imagine if these do well for them, and well, I think you know what I mean by that, they may put in even more. So we'll have to wait and see. But so that was the one bit of local news I wanted to get to. Also, a couple of announcements related to the community center. Of course, the monthly dinner is a week from today, October 19th. The menu is Sean's Stew, and it's sponsored by Windermere Real Estate, and I will mention that again next week, but that is next Friday, a week from today, and the dinner starts at 5. It's $7 for adults, $3.50 for kids 10 and under. And another announcement from the community center, Monday, October 15th from 5 to 8 p.m. is the annual pie-making class. That will be a cost of $10 to cover the supplies that you'll be using during the class. And there's some more items you need to bring along, I would suggest just contact the community center. Find out if you want to participate in that. Find out what you need to bring. And, of course, you need to bring your $10 to pay for the cost of the other supplies that they will provide. So that's Monday, October 15th, 5 to 8. And back over to sports. We didn't get to the results for the cross country thanks to the craziness of the internet, but I managed to get those. It took me a few tries. I finally had to go onto off of my phone and onto a different computer because it just kept spamming me. So the most recent meet for the cross country was over at the expo. And that was on Wednesday, and I happened to get over there for the varsity race. But before that was the girls' junior varsity race, and Samantha Peterson with a PR of 29:32.6. Samantha's a sophomore at Rogue River High School, and she's competing this season in the girls' JV. And again, a PR for her, so good job, Samantha. Jonah Maris ran in the boys' varsity race. Of course, he's a senior. And he wasn't able to PR. He actually PR'd with a 19:20.9 at the Southern Oregon Invite. That was a week ago. But he ran a good 19:46.1. Jonah said he went out a little too fast at the beginning of that race, and that was the reason he wasn't able to PR. And then finally, Cameron Smith, the Rogue Talk mascot, also a senior at Rogue River High School, he did PR with a 17:47.5. Despite the PR, he dropped from 5th to 6th in the district. And the reason that's important is the top 5 go to state. So he's really got his work cut out for him. He's got to improve his times a little bit if he wants to make it to the state cross-country meet. But next up for cross-country will be the district meet, which will be really probably where most of the times that will determine who goes and who doesn't go to state. That's coming up on Thursday, October 25th at the Valley of the Rogue. So advantage for the Rogue River runners, that's their home course, so they'll be ready to go there. And on other sports news, next up for the volleyball, they're playing right now at Bonanza, but that's probably almost over. That started, I think, at 1:30. But then they will play Tuesday, 6:15 versus Illinois Valley at home. And then on Thursday, they'll travel to Lakeview, another 6:15 start. Boys soccer next up tomorrow, U.S. Cellular Field number 10 versus St. Mary's. And then Wednesday, they will go to Paisley at 4:30. Girls soccer also taking on, also playing at at U.S. Cellular Field. They're at number 14 tomorrow, 10 a.m. They'll take on Cascade Christian High School. And then Wednesday at U.S. Cellular number 14 as well, they will take on St. Mary's. And, of course, football right here on 94.3 The Bridge. At 7 o'clock tonight, the Chieftains will take on Illinois Valley. They'll be looking to get back on the winning track and taking on, they're ranked 26th, Illinois Valley 27, so it should be a pretty even matchup tonight. We'll be on the air at 6:50, and the kickoff will be at 7 o'clock. And next week's show, we will have Morgan Cottle. He's the principal at South Valley Academy, the Rogue River School District's newest school. And I don't know a lot about that school. That's why we're having Morgan on. We're going to find out what is South Valley Academy, what do they do there, and what's it all about. So we're looking forward to talking to Morgan. And so that's going to cover it. So again, I hope you'll come out to Chieftain Stadium tonight. Cheer on your Chieftains in football. And if soccer's your game, there's a couple of opportunities tomorrow. You can head out to U.S. Cellular Field for girls at 10 and boys at noon. And so get out and support those Chieftain sports. And I'm looking forward to tonight. I hope the Chieftains can bounce back. It's been kind of a tough run for the Chieftains. After opening the season with 2 wins, they've lost 4 straight, but they've really got a good opportunity where they can win the next 3 games and end the season on a winning note. So So thanks again to Liberty for coming on the show. And everybody be good to one another, because Rogue Talk is over.
You've been listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge. Listen to Rogue Talk with Jeff Smith Fridays at 3 p.m. right here on Rogue River's Hometown Voice. 94.3 The Bridge. Or on demand at 943thebridge.com.